Hello, my speech is on our paper, The Exchange Motive and Informed Long-Term Care, Evidence from the HLX Exit Interview. My co-author, Max Gronick, cannot be here, and I'm Frederick Creel, and we both work at the CMR at the University of Cologne. Our research was driven by the question whether we can detect evidence that parents compensate their children for providing informal care. The motivation behind this is that the informal care sector itself is huge, and also the informal care by children is the most important care arrangement in the US. That's something that we will see later on in the descriptive statistics. Furthermore, we asked ourselves if it is pure altruism that drives the children's decision to put so much effort and so much time into providing the informal care, or if there might be some economic background behind this. And thirdly, we have really detailed data available about the hours of care that the children provided, and also about the bequests that are dedicated to each of the children. And that is possible because the HRS exit data contains such information. HRS exit data is one special part of the HRS data, which is the US equivalent of the share data, which we have heard lots of presentations on. Okay, the aim of our paper is to provide statistics firstly. They are interesting by its own right. We want to test the strategic bequest motive, which was first coined by Bernheim, and we put special effort and controlling on altruism. And thirdly, we want to focus on the informal long-term care sector at the end of life, because this is where it all comes together. The care needs of the frail elderly are going to peak, or are likely to going to peak at near the end of the life when the body is weakest, and also the bequest, the upcoming bequest is visible for the children, it is soon to be realized. Okay, this is how I will proceed. First, I will talk about the descriptive statistics, and then present the estimation strategy and talk about the potential pitfalls, and last but not least, present the results. Okay, the HRS exit interview, as I said before, is a study in the US. It's an extensive longitudinal study of persons above the age of 50 years. The special thing about it is that it is a one last observation of a respondent, and that is the respondent is dead, and after his death close relatives are being asked about certain things about the respondent, so that way we receive this last observation. We use pooled data from 2002 until 2010. And wherever we needed some extra data, which is not asked in the exit interview, we merge data from the original HRS. Our sample size is 1,363 single respondents, only single because we wanted to measure precisely, and whenever there is a partner or a spouse of the respondent, then he is likely to receive help from the spouse, so that way, by excluding those, we can focus on the child-parent relationship only. And we have 5,625 observations. This is the unit of observation that our econometric models are on. But first I will talk about the respondents, because that's an interesting statistic too. So in our sample, near the end of life, we see that about 70% of the respondents had any limitations with IADL, and 55% had limitations with ADL. We split it up, about 50% of the respondents received informal care only. So this is the main share. It's huge. And the formal care respondents who receive formal care only make up a percentage of 22%. Now we split it up, the care that the caretakers receive by various kinds of person. Here we can see that children make up the largest share, with about 72%, and we still have some help by the spouse, even though it's supposed to be not existent, but that's some measurement error. The question is about the last month of before the respondent's death, so it could be on one hand that the spouse or that they died really closely to each other, or someone just included the spouse. Well, that's not something to talk about now, within 18 minutes. Okay, and we see that formal care is provided by a person of an organization, it makes up 15%, and institutionalized respondents make up about 37%. Let's look at the distribution of the bequest that the children receive. So now we are back on the children level. And we split it up, the children, into two groups. One group who provided any care, and the other one who didn't provide any care. And we can see that for both groups, we have a large amount of zero bequest for most of the children. So over the 50th percentile, none of them received any bequest. But then from, I think, the 60th percentile on, we have a much larger amount of bequest for each of the percentiles for the group who provided care. And this reflects also in the mean, where we see that on average, the group of children who provided care received $43,000 in bequests, whereas the group who didn't provide any care received only about half as much, $20,000 on average. The distribution with many zeros in the beginning leads to the usage of Tobit models. So these are the equations. These are really stylized equations, but we use Tobit models, as you will see later on. I will present two only because of time limitations. First is we investigated whether providing any care of the children increased by how much the dollar amount of bequests are increased by that. And secondly, we also looked at the continuous case where we analyzed whether how much each additional hour of provided care affects the dollar amount of bequest that is received later on. We included controls on the respondent level and on the child level, and it's a plethora of controls which I couldn't even put on this slide. Good. We had different strategies to tackle the biases. First, well, we had two different biases. Mainly, first is omitted variable bias. We figured that altruism plays a major part for both. Altruism within a family plays a major part both for providing care and also for providing bequests. So families that are more altruistic are going to have a higher measure in both of these variables. And also the quality of relationship plays a role. So if there's a parent-child pair that has a good relationship, it's more likely that they are going to exchange the bequests and the care compared to a sibling that doesn't have a good relationship with the parent. The first strategy is to use proxies for the altruism. We figured that a respondent who gives any donations to charitable organizations also is more altruistic. And the second point for the quality of relationship, we have a proxy called frequency of contact. So parent-child pairs who have more frequent contact are likely to have better quality of relationship. Simultaneously, we used as a second strategy two-stage D-squares with two instruments, both relating to the gender of the children. The notion behind this is that females are much more likely to help, to be helpful, to be around, to call and stuff. So this is the relevance condition, and also at the same time we assumed that the gender does not influence the bequest decision. So there is our second strategy. So being female influences the care variable positively, and number of sisters influences us negatively, since there's less total care for oneself to provide. The second bias is simultaneity bias. Here it is that higher expected bequest also induces more care, so this is a form of reverse causality, and the direction of the bias here is unknown. First strategy to tackle this bias is two stages death, least squares, and the second bias, the second strategy is to use within family fixed effects. The identifying variation here is the differences of care within all children of one respondent. So it is the main assumption behind this is that the expected bequest influences both children equally, holding everything else constant. Okay, let's look at the results. What we have here for the first equation with binary care, we can see at first using the standard Tobit models that we have an increase of $13,000 by providing any care on average. Our proxy is highly significant too. The frequency of contact proxy is not significant. Well, that's how it is, but therefore we included the IV regression where we control for the biases. And we can see that the overall bias in the baseline models seem to be downward, as we see here, an increase of $37,000 for providing any care on the expected amount of bequest that a child receives. For the fixed effects model, where we compared the two siblings only, we have an even higher coefficient, but it's not significantly different from the IV estimation results. Good. The second equation is with the continuous hours of care. And again, we have a downward biased baseline model. And here we don't see any significance. But when we use the IV Tobit, we see that each additional hour of care that is provided by the children increases the expected bequest by $480. Yes. Good. What did we see? We saw a strongly significant effect of caring on the bequest decision of the parents. We looked at the extensive and intensive margin of care. The detailed data allowed us to measure it precisely, and we used various strategies to tackle the biases. Thank you very much for your attention. Any questions? Yes.
I'm sorry, maybe I missed it, but what is the percentage of the sample that you're using which has zero bequests?
The exact percentage, well, I don't have the exact percentage, but, well, here it's over 50% who don't receive any bequests.
The reason I'm asking, I've been studying the inter-giver transfers, and using two-part model is a better strategy than having, you know, Tobit, because there is a huge number, like the distribution is like 0, 0, 0,
and
then a spike, very, very huge numbers. So I just, if you try to this strategy.
Yeah, that is true. So for the continuous care, we used the ones who received a, the two-part model is superior.
So-called hurdle or Krebs.
Yeah.
Two-part model where you have binary first stage decision whether to give or not, and then the continuous or less correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are in Statham, there is a comment
I think that is the Tobit model too.
Yeah.
I see using
Tobit uses a similar mechanism at the intensive and extensive margins, but the hurdle model allows the coefficients go different directions
for the two
extensive
groups.
Versus extensive. And actually, that's the Cox exchange model is based on this distinction between the two dimensions, extensive versus intensive. But I don't know how it was about inter vivos transfers. I haven't thought about it before.
It should be the same. That's right.
Yes.
In the paper we included binary cases only, so that, and still there's significant effects.
In this exchange model, it's basically the richer children should not, at the extensive margin, there should be negative effect of income, but then as in the altruism model, but then at the intensive margin, it should be positive. That's what distinguishes, well, at least theoretically, that's the model.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any more questions? Yes, please.
I have questions with regards to causality.
Yeah.
So, do you have data?
The causality is. That would be the simultaneity bias. So it goes in either direction. So either the children expect a higher bequest and therefore provide more care, so they're influenced by the bequest. But here it is more clear than for the inter vivos, for example, because first the care is provided and then the bequest comes in return. That's one point. And the second point is that within family fixed effects, we rule that out by this assumption that the expected bequest influences all children equally. So we can, if one child opts for caring, then that's the decision of the child that influences that decision, of the bequest decision. That's a brain breaker,
yes.
I guess.
Yes,
but
I imagine, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Hi, I'm Francis Dickinson, Department of Health. I'm just trying to understand the bequest variable. Presumably, there's an expected bequest, and there's also an actual bequest. What did you measure?
That is the special thing about our research, that we have figures about the actual realized bequest, because we have data from after the death of the respondent.
But what might motivate carers when people are still alive is expected bequest, which could differ from the actual bequest.
It is an uncertain. The life expectancy of the elderly parent is still uncertain. So the child enters into this relationship without knowing how much he will get out from it, he or she will get out. Yes.
Do you know how far away the different children are from the parents?
There is one variable called lives within 10 miles. That's the only measure that we have because of data restriction, government restriction. But that would be actually a good instrument. We thought about that.
There's a literature on that because there's a strategic decision of the children where to position themselves, and years prior to the possible need for care. So it might be that if you don't want to provide that care, you live far away. But then the question is, do you get blamed for that, or do you not get blamed for that?
Hi, I'm number of children matter?
You mean the number of sisters or the number of children in
total? Number of children. Rather than the probability of taking care.
It influences it negatively. And also the number of sisters influences it negatively.
And the time received?
The total time received? I don't know that by heart. But I can check in the results. All right, thank you.